2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. And Chet, close again, but no cigar for the Birds of Baltimore on Sunday.
Entertaining game, at least, but yeah, another L, so they are playing out the string. It is what it is. What are you going to do?
Well, I think we're going to get to that in a little bit. And last week we were heavy football with Keith Collin and Coach Dick Vermeil. And tonight we're going all over the Philly sports scene with one of our favorite guests from Frank's Place. Frank Fitzpatrick will be joining us.
Yeah, this is Frank's fourth visit with us, and he is actually a bit under the weather tonight, he told me. But in keeping with his status as a Philly legend, he's going to tough it out, and we do appreciate that.
All right. Well, hey, we'll have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question tonight about close to 7:30, and we're going to be giving away that signed 8x10 photo of Eagles Hall of Famer Maxie Bohn. And, Jeff, we've been trying to get this thing away for a month and haven't been able to do it, but the first person that calls correctly answers that trivia question tonight is getting it. So the ShopForKisses.org phone line to answer that trivia question, write it down now, 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. And, Chad, I'm going to say it right now. It's a Flyers question. It's a current events Flyers question. My God, if we can't give that away, nobody's paying attention. All right. So, hey, Frank, we've been taking a lot of heat over this from your friends, but we're still we want to offer up a warm Philly Press Box Radio welcome to the legendary Frank Fitzpatrick.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been getting a little heat about that myself, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
Well-deserved.
I did like Frank's comment on Facebook in response to the ribbing from his pals. He said they don't make legends quite like they used to. But anyway, Frank, we had you on with us after
myself.
Frank, we had you on with us after the Villanova basketball championship last April. That was a lot of fun talking about that. But your two previous appearances were just after the 2014 year ended and then on our final show of 2015. So you are now officially our year in review guy, and that's where we're going to start tonight. Nothing locally compares to what Villanova did, but how will 2016 be remembered otherwise regarding the Philly sports scene?
Well, I was going to say that it's you know, I don't feel so well, and it's kind of liberating being sick of something other than Philly sports teams. you know, it's people want to look at it maybe as a rebuilding year for a couple of the teams, but I don't know. I think that's a little optimistic. I think the Phillies are still several years away from contending. You know, I tell you what, I mean, this is going to sound like I'm a contrarian, but I have not been that disappointed in the Eagles season. I mean, I think if you had a realistic expectation of what this season was going to be like a couple weeks before it started, I don't think we'd be too far off from where we are now. And having said that, they've been closer in most of their games than I ever would have imagined. I mean, I figured maybe their record would be similar to what it is now, but to have competed in most of those games as closely as they have is totally a surprise. I mean, I've been impressed. I've got to say, I'm a little impressed with the team. I think their offensive line has at times in almost every game been dominating. I think their defensive line and their linebackers are a little better than I anticipated. The running game hasn't been bad. Wentz, you know, once he learns to, you know, that every play isn't the last play of the Super Bowl, I think he's going to be just fine. You know, what they need, obviously, and I'm not the first to say this clearly, are a couple good cornerbacks and a bunch of wide receivers. Now, maybe that indicates that they're a long way off. I don't know. But I'd say of all the teams in this last calendar year, they were the least disappointing to me.
Yeah, my official prediction was 6-10 right after they made the trade of Bradford. So going into the year, I thought 6-10, but we all got kind of spoiled by the 3-0 start.
Yes, we did.
I guess that, you know, understandable. What is your assessment, though, of the rookie coach, Doug Peterson? How has he done? Some people think, you know, he should be fired already, which is ridiculous. How do you think Doug has done?
Yeah, I think it's a little too early to tell. I mean, again, he doesn't have, let's face it, he hasn't had a whole lot to work with this year. You know, he's the guy that looked like a genius after 3 weeks, the way the Wentz looked like the greatest quarterback in the league, and now we've got a more realistic assessment of him. He seems to be, it seems to me, he's a player's coach. I mean, he obviously is, you know, that somebody that I think players like playing for, although I was kind of surprised when he called out Ertz and, was it McKelvin for their play?
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, when they clearly didn't hustle on those two plays, but you know it's too early to say. I mean, I like what they've done with in some things. You know, I think their running game's been much improved. I think he's shown a ability to stick with it in a way that Andy really never did. If they can get a couple things straightened out, you know, we'll see. But you're right, it's far too early. And you hear the people calling for his head, and you think, this is Philadelphia. You know, when are we going to get over that tendency to cut people's heads off a little too quickly? And you know, and the minute Andy's gone, now you hear people pining for him to be back. So you can't win.
Well, hey Frank, let's switch over to the Sixers, and in that case, the fans seem to have been very patient.
Yeah.
You know, to let this process play out a little bit, and they're starting to come around a little bit. Now they got themselves a bit of a log jam with all these big guys, but how do you see that playing out, and are you surprised that the fans are patient, or do they just not care about NBA basketball?
No, I am surprised that they've been this patient. I mean, because it seems to me, and I don't think this is any secret, that when they drafted those three bigs, everybody was wondering, well, how is this going to work? I mean, how are they going to accommodate all three of these guys? And I think people assumed that maybe one would be traded by this time. And now it's like everything that people feared is playing itself out. You've got three guys, three big guys that they can't find enough playing time for, and one of them is clearly unhappy, and there's one that the fans are turned off on. So, you know, you're risking – you know, two great talents by this process, this strategy that so far hasn't borne out. But I, you know, you got to love what you see from Embiid. I mean, this guy is remarkable. You know, what an athletic seven foot plus guy. I was talking to Jimmy Lynam not that long ago, and we were saying that this guy's more athletic than Wilt, I think. You know, and I mean, that's sort of heresy to say in Philadelphia, but. He claims he has that argument all the time with Sonny Hill, and you know Jimmy claims that Embiid is the guy he says he sees him in practice with a soccer ball. He said you can't believe how much dexterity he has in his feet, just you know kicking a soccer ball around. He's just a remarkable athlete for a guy his size, and I can't wait till they get the pieces around him because I think there's really something there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't wait to see what happens when Simmons comes along and they start playing again. That's going to be fun to watch. Now, you mentioned a name a moment ago, Frank, Wilt. This is the 50th anniversary of the 66-67 World Championship team that featured Wilt, Billy C., Hal Greer, Chet Walker and company. I was 9 years old and thought that team was going to stay together and win several more titles. Didn't happen, of course. What are your memories of that great team from 1966-67?
Oh my gosh, that was such a year. I mean, I was 17, so I wasn't, you know, feeling my oats, and I just loved that team. I always remember. I tell people, I always remember my uncle, Al Domenico, was the trainer on that team. And
oh wow,
yeah. So he would take us to games, and I remember once he took a friend and I to a game. He said, "I'm going to let you come in the locker room, but you've got to leave as soon as the first player arrives." And so of course, my friend and I are hoping it's Wilt. We're praying that it's Wilt. You know, maybe Hal Greer or Billy Cunningham or somebody. I always remember it was Art Haman walked in, I think. And we were like devastated. But that was such a great team, and it, you know, had such a nice mix of guys that had that local angle with Wilt on the bench, you had Melchione and Gukas, who were just coming off great college careers, and you had had Chet Walker, who was such a prototypical new era, forward, a small forward. You had Luke Jackson, who could who could rebound with the best of them, and really sacrificed his game to play with Will. His numbers were not what they could have been because he sort of sacrificed for Will, and Will himself sacrificed. On that 67 team, his numbers weren't anywhere near what they had been in the earlier stages of his career. But he was, I think, third in the league in assists, and he led the league in rebounds, and he averaged 20 some points a game. And people forget other guys they had on the bench, some of the Syracuse leftovers like Dave Gambi and Larry Costello, who was, I may be mistaken in this, but I think he was the last of the two-handed set shooters.
Mm-hmm. So, I think you're right. Yep,
they really had all sorts of guys on that team. It was just a fun team to watch, and an overwhelmingly dominant team. I mean, when they ran up that 68-13 record, that was astounding at the time. I mean, no one envisioned the days of the Warriors or Jordan's Bulls, but it was great. I just loved that season.
Frank, you wrote a piece not too long ago, and if you care to share a little bit about it, about your mom scoring games and how that kind of took you to the new level in sports as just a kid. How did that all happen? And was your mom just a crazy sports fan?
She became one. She wasn't as a kid, and then she married my dad, who was a crazy sports fan. And it was, when they got married, it was right around the time they lived on the street where Gola lived in Alney. So they became enormous Gola fans. And she started listening to the games on basketball, and she was always sort of the nervous type. And so to pass the time while she was listening, she started keeping score, and she liked it. It really relaxed her, I think, at the end of a long day, to sit down there at a kitchen table with her scorebook and her cigarettes and maybe a juice glass full of beer and keep score to the games. And she did that for every, I guess she was doing it for LaSalle games back when I was a kid, and she did it for every Warriors game, every Sixers game. I tell people I always remember the night of the Will Chamberlain scored 100 points in March of 62. I walked in the house, and I was used to, when I walked into the kitchen, to look at her scoreboard to get some sense of how the game was going, because you could see from her X's and O's who was scoring a lot of points. And I saw for Chamberlain, she had two rows of X's and O's, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what's going on here? So I sat down and listened to the rest of the game with her. But, yeah, she just loved Philadelphia, and she loved, rooting for its teams. And by the end of her life, she was a pretty avid sports fan, but it was a fun thing to watch develop, and I kind of wish I had saved those scorebooks now. It would have been fun to go back through them.
Well, that's what I was going to say to you. What happened to those scorebooks? They would be absolute treasures.
Yes, they would. My mother was someone who didn't keep things. She discarded everything. She was not a pack rat, and unfortunately, those scorebooks were among the things she got rid of. But yeah, I sure would love to have them.
Wow.
Well, Frank, because you mentioned that, I'm going to jump ahead to something else I wrote down here. One of my favorite pieces that you wrote in the recent months was an August column about artifacts cluttering the basement, old newspaper clippings, game programs, books, etc. She didn't save that one for you, unfortunately. I loved that column, and I love how you summed it up. We all have a past. We all hold on to artifacts that help it stay alive. To discard the latter, it seems to me, is to discredit the former. So that's good writing, by the way, Frank. That's the kind of stuff that supports that legend term that we joked about earlier.
There you go, yeah. Well, I think all of us have, all of us that are sportsmen have those kind of artifacts, and some of them have them in prominent places. Some of them have dens that are just filled with them, and some of them have sort of set them aside over the years, and it's kind of fun to go back and rediscover these things that you felt strongly enough about to save. Yeah, I mean, walking through the basement and just looking through some of the stuff I had down there was amazing, because I'm just the opposite of my mother. I save everything. My wife is more like my mom, and wants to clear the house at every opportunity, and I just can't bear to do it. I mean, these are things that you have an attachment to, not just a physical attachment, but an emotional attachment. I mean, you know, look at how we were talking about the 67 Sixers, or, you know, how you guys, when you're talking, reminisce about various teams and players that you've seen over the years. I mean, that's what makes sports great. And by holding on to those little artifacts that remind you of them, you're holding on to a little piece of yourself, really.
Couldn't agree more. I'm sitting in a room surrounded by stuff as we're talking.
Yeah,
and my wife's
always
like, this stuff has to go. It has to go. There ain't no way.
Nope, I'm going first. Yeah.
Hey, Frank, let's slide over and talk about the Phillies. And, you know, they're awful young. They just signed another elderly pitcher. I guess it's more trade bait, probably, or an inning eater. How do you see this playing out for them? I'm thinking, you know, they've got some good young arms, but they've got a lot of players that still haven't even made the big leagues yet that they're dependent on. I'm thinking we're three more years out.
Yeah, I mean, you keep hearing that they've got this Cubs strategy working, that they're shooting for 2019 is the year they contend. But I've yet to see the Anthony Rizzos and the Chris Bryants and and those kind of guys, that the young talent that the Cubs have. I mean, we've got some nice young players, and I keep hearing we've got some nice young players in the minor leagues, but until I see them competing for a while at the major league level, I'm going to temper my enthusiasm. I think they're probably going about things the right way. If these players in the minor leagues are as good as they think they are, and if they can add a few pieces the way the Cubs did in trading for Arrieta and the shortstop Russell, then maybe we're going to have another great era of Phillies baseball. I sure hope so, because there's nothing more enjoyable than spending 6 months really interested in how a team does. There's just nothing like a baseball season in terms of the ups and downs and just the way you treasure it in retrospect, and you kind of miss that. I think they're in the late 2000s, the first decades of the 2000s, when we were all thinking that this was going to last forever. And when you have a couple of years where things are pretty miserable, you forget that pretty quickly, and you kind of think that you kind of wonder if it's ever going to come back, and I sure hope it does.
Yeah, play
only won 63
radio
games
or TV when things are going well like that, and every summer night you've got to have it on.
That's right. They went from
63 wins to 71 wins this past year. Hopefully they'll do a little better in the year ahead, and within a couple of years they will be competing. But another thing that we like talking about is Penn State football, Frank. You covered the Nittany Lions for quite a while as a beat reporter for them, for the Inquirer, and what do you think about the renaissance this year, the surprising win streak, 11-2 record, Rose Bowl match, number 5 in the nation? How did you enjoy watching the Nittany Lions in action this year?
Yeah, I guess in Philadelphia we've got to look to the college teams these days for good news and happy stories. But, I'll be honest with you. I was really, really surprised at how well they did. Early in the season they didn't look – they didn't look good at all. They looked bad. I mean, that Michigan game was terrible to watch.
Yeah.
They didn't look. I mean, they beat Temple, but they didn't look great in doing it. And the loss to Pitt and some of those early games against some inferior teams were not impressive at all. So you got to give James Franklin a lot of credit. I mean, he and McSorley. I mean, I think I really like McSorley. I think he. His development is as much as Saquon Barkley is a great runner and a wonderful athlete, I think it's the development of McSorley that has really gotten them to this stage. I mean, they had a couple good runners the last decade, and and without that quarterback, it just didn't. And that includes Hackenberg, who I always thought was a disappointment. Without that quarterback, things just didn't work out. And I think Franklin's it's just a remarkable job. I mean, it's like from the beginning of season to now, things are totally flipped on their head. The way you look at the team, the way you look at the program, the way you look at Franklin, I think they've got a lot. I still think they're not in the clear yet. I mean, because let's face it, when I travel around, you're outside of Pennsylvania, people do not look at Penn State favorably. I mean, and I can only suspect that if all these fans still attach this stigma to Penn State, that a lot of potential players do as well. So they've still got a hill to climb, but this has certainly been a fun year, an encouraging one, and a memorable one. Yeah.
Well, Frank, you were around that Penn State program for many years when Joe Paterno was having undefeated seasons and was screaming for some sort of a playoff or something to give his team's chances of winning national championships when they kept getting voted out. Now we have something. What do you think of this system they have in place now?
Well, I mean, I think there's always going to be, no matter how the way you draw the cutoff line at, there's always going to be disputes as to, you know, for the ninth team in an 8-team playoff, or like Penn State, the fifth team in a 4-team playoff. I think it's hard to make the argument for Penn State, even though they won the conference championship, which should count for something. That loss to Pitt just, was a crusher. Nobody knew it at the time. They beat Ohio State. You know, you've got to give them credit for that. But, you know, maybe if they'd been a little closer in the Michigan loss, it would have given people a little more pause, and maybe they would have gotten a little more consideration in the playoff. But I don't know. It's a better system than it used to be, but it's still not perfect. And as long as you're going to have a process that doesn't allow what happens on the field to determine the final four or final 8 teams or 16, or however many it's going to be, you're always going to have arguments. You're always going to have disputes, and you're always going to have flaws. As I say, it's better than when Penn State should have won the national title and President Nixon awarded it to Texas back in 1969 or so.
And it 94 also, they should have won.
And 94, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
94, as I remember, the argument was that in the Indiana game, they didn't win by quite enough on a day that, was Nebraska, was that the other team they were?
Yep, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Sure was.
On a day Nebraska ran over somebody, Penn State only beat Indiana like 22-18 or something. So and that dropped them in the polls, and they never quite recovered.
Yep. Hey, Frank, I read your column every week. I love it. And by the way, I'm one of those guys who actually buys the Sunday Inquirer, the physical newspaper,
the
brings it home and loves to sit down and read it.
You're the one.
It's great. Yeah, I'm the one.
Yeah.
Among your many memorable weekend columns since your last visit with us, Frank, a recent piece about that early 1968 problem at the New Spectrum when the roof blew off the joint. Your terrific Mother's Day piece about the oddly close relationship between Lou Gehrig and his mom. And a September column with the headline, "The Sad Final Days of Every Baseball Season." In that one, you wrote about how some of the many ball players who got to the big leagues but played in zero or maybe one game, including Robin Yount's brother Larry, a pitcher who hurt his arm warming up and never got to throw a pitch in the game. Kind of a sad piece for those players that you wrote about, but great stuff. I loved all of those.
Yeah, you know, that those players whose major league career consisted of one game always fascinated me. I mean, there was a guy, I was thinking about writing a book on this guy, matter of fact, but I couldn't find enough information about him. A guy named Harry O'Neill, grew up in Derby, was a Marine. Before World War II, he played one game for the A's late in the season, a doubleheader in Detroit. Never got an at-bat. Became a teacher in Upper Derby High School and then enlisted in the Marines in World War II and got killed on Iwo Jima. I always thought, man, what a fascinating story that is. And there's a million of those stories out there. I mean, you know, you guys are Field of Dreams fans, I'm sure, so you know the story of men like Graham. And there's every page of the baseball encyclopedia almost, there's a story like that. And some of them are really fascinating.
Hey, Frank, I have one final question for you, and I'm really curious to your answer on this. Why is it that you are not a hockey fan, or you are not a Flyers fan anyway?
Well, you know, I was a huge Flyers fan. I mean, their first season, I was at the Spectrum all the time, and I shouldn't admit this, but professionally, I had a little problems with Snyder and Clark over the years, and it just sort of soured my outlook and my perspective of the Flyers, and so I just sort of it was enough to make me my interest be diminished in the Flyers. Let's put it that way. I still follow them from a distance, but I don't think I'll ever be quite as passionate as I once was.
Gotcha. I kind of took it from just some of your comments and things that I've read that you you just weren't a big hockey guy, and you're not a big you don't like the goon stuff.
Yeah, well, I've always been bothered by that, although I must admit that, you know, in 74 and 75, I was as caught up in the bullies as everybody else in the city was, so I plead guilty to that.
All right. Well, Frank, hey, as always, our time flew by, and we covered just – oh, one more thing, Villanova Wildcats. We're going for another championship.
Wow, how about that? I mean, you know, this is – I can't remember a streak like this where, you know, locally, where teams coming off a championship and starts out the season undefeated and number one. I mean, you got to go back to maybe LaSalle in the mid-50s or Penn in the late 60s. And even them, I think Villanova has them topped. This is
yeah, they're pretty good.
Yes, they are. I mean, they're fun to watch too. I mean, they play team basketball and they move the ball well, and they've got a lot of threats. And I love Bridges. I love his wingspan and his defense, and Josh Hart. It's a good team. It's a fun team to watch. And Jay Wright, of course, is a tremendous coach and a great guy.
Yeah, Temple came in there thinking they were going to give him a game, and boy, that got ugly early.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Temple has a tendency to be able to do that. You know, they can play as ugly as anyone.
I hear you. All right, Frank. Well, hey, I think we've taken up all your time. We tried to cover all the bases and get a good review of 2016 Philadelphia sports.
All right. Well, I hope I helped. So I'm sorry. I'm not feeling well, so I'm probably a little duller in my mental capacity. But
we hope you feel better, Frank.
Still legendary.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Frank, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Same to you.
All right,
Frank, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, Chet, hey, it's trivia time, and we are giving this thing away. If Chet, if you know anything about anything, you know this answer, all right? We'll give it away, this signed 8x10 photo of Eagles Hall of Famer Maxie Bond, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that calls and answers this question. The shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. Here you go, dropkick, Chet. The Flyers have only 5 players with a plus minus, a plus one or above. Okay, so you got 1 out of 5 guys to get this. Who leads the team with a plus four?
That's not a drop kick, but I think people can, you know, figure out how to find the answer, you know, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what, just because I'm the kind of guy I am, Chet, and I want to give this prize away, it is not Giroux, it is not Simmons, it's not Voracek, and it's not Gostisbehere. All right? Now, I've made it a little easier for your wild guesses. All right, let's get on to our thanking our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Here we go. It's Fred and Butter time with our special guest, Fred Hugo, joining us to provide a breakdown of this week's NFC East games. Fred, welcome back, and the Eagles took it down to the wire, but they let us down just one more time.
Yeah, that was a good game. I didn't get to watch the whole thing. I had a family member in the hospital that I was with, but I got to see it a little bit. I didn't really get to hear much, but I saw them go for two. And actually, you know what I did see? That Nelson Aguilar play where he didn't hit the hole, and I almost screamed in the ICU room. But
he had a lot of room to run there. Yep.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's funny. It's funny because the critics, the fire Doug Peterson critics, you know, point out what a stupid play. Well, if the guy runs through the hole that was right there, he might still be running.
Yeah, I agree. He could have scored. It was wide open. And how you – I don't know. That's like schoolyard playing at Colonial Park. You know, if your guy's blocking the guy that way, you hit the other side. You don't go around them. It just made no sense at all.
Yep.
I could have run through that.
Well, hey, how did we do last week, and where do we stand now in our standings?
Well, Bill, you and me, we had the same picks, and we ended up going 3-1. The Redskins did what they do, screw us up, and they lost. So we went 3-1. Chet, you went 2-2, but you remain above 500. So you have a 25-24-1 record. I am 29-20-1, and Bill, you are 31-18-1 with a 2-game lead.
Ooh, time's running out, Fred. Time's running out.
I'm going to get desperate. I'll have to make some crazy picks here. I don't know. We'll see.
Uh-oh.
Well, we only have 3 games to pick this week that we'll talk about. We have, of course, the Giants coming to the link for a Thursday night game. We have Washington at Chicago on Saturday, and then Monday night, Detroit's at Dallas. So this week we have NFL Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Beautiful. I love it.
I'm okay with that.
I set it up to wrap all my presents on Saturday, so I have an excuse to watch the games and do nothing, and I'll just wrap. You know what I mean?
There you go. I don't think you're supposed to say that when somebody could be listening.
I don't think she is. She's at work, so we're good.
There you go. All right, let's get started. Let's go. Let's talk Washington, Chicago first. We'll come back and do the Eagles last.
Sounds good. The Washington Redskins are 3-point favorites coming into Chicago. They're 7-6-1. They're 1-3 in their last 4, coming off a loss to Carolina on Monday night. The Bears have lost 2 in a row, but have played tough. Almost beat Green Bay last week. Cousins, the Redskins are just, in the beginning of the year, we called them the stinking Redskins, and they're an average team, and they just are. We're on the wrong side of it sometimes. I think they're an 8-8 average team. In December, Cousins has 3 TDs to 3 interceptions, so he's cooled down a lot. The defense looks weak. They were on the field way too long last week, and with Jordan Reed out, looks like a different offense. On the Chicago side of the ball, Matt Barkley, surprisingly, he has some turnovers there, but he's playing well. Their defense last week was kind of hit or miss against Green Bay. They would have great drives where they totally shut them down, and for the most part, their pass D held them under control, except for that late bomb to Jordy Nelson. I think I don't think the Redskins can win this one. I think they're going to start to unravel. I think the Bears' pass D is set up well enough to handle the Redskins' passing offense, and the Redskins, as they never seem to be able to, won't be able to run the ball. I think the Bears actually win this in an upset at home, 27-20.
Wow. How about Matt Barkley? Very impressive. The Bears gave the Packers a hell of a battle last Sunday, as you mentioned, Fred. Meanwhile, Washington lost that one Monday night that they really could have used in their playoff push against Carolina. That was a bit of an upset. I see a return to normalcy here, however. I know you like the Bears in this one. I'm picking the Redskins by the same score that you went with, 27-20, but in favor of the Skins. But you started to convince me a little bit there, Fred, that maybe the Bears will win this one, but I'm going to stick with my guns and go with the Redskins, 27-20.
Well, you know, I say it every week, I kind of like the Redskins, and I thought the other night they certainly laid an egg in that game and played pretty crappy. But I don't expect them to do that again. And even though the Bears are at home, I am going to go Redskins.
Okay. All right, that'll get me within one game.
Yeah, we'll see. Detroit at Dallas, let's see.
All right, the 9-5 Lions traveling to Dallas, who are 12-2. Hurt pains me to say. Cowboys are 7-point favorites coming off that win over the Buccaneers on Sunday Night Football. And the Lions are coming off a loss to the Giants. Cowboys are at home again, and the Lions basically, they don't need to win to get in, but they need a win to stay in the race as far as winning the division. If they lose, there's a lot of other implications if they'll get that wild card or not. The Lions passing game, I think, matches up well against Dallas' secondary. Stafford's finger is still lingering, though last week it didn't seem to bother him too much. They didn't have any points on the board, but he still threw for like 270-plus yards. I think to win this game, the Lions are going to have to stop the run and try to find some semblance of a running game, and there's just no way that's going to happen. Dallas is going to continue to run the ball and continue to stop the run. I got Dallas winning this 28-17.
All right. Yeah, Dallas may or may not need to win this game by the time it kicks off Monday evening, but I just don't think the Lions can win that one on the road. I know they're a team that really could use a win in the playoff situation that they're in, but I just think the Cowboys right now are the better team here, and the boys will win this one. I have it 31-21, Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just don't see Dallas slowing down too much, but, you know, they're just, I hate to say it, they're the best team in the NFC, and I'm afraid there's not anybody that's really all that close, but I'll take the Cowboys. But I do want to come back after we do our Eagles pick. I want to come back and ask both of you, actually, about this Jerry Jones rumor of starting Tony Romo down the stretch. But let's get to the Eagles first.
I didn't hear that rumor yet until you just said it, so I'll be excited to talk about that too. So Giants tomorrow night are coming to Philly, Thursday night football. The Giants are 2.5-point favorites. They're 10-4, winning 2 in a row, and the Eagles, as we know, are 5-9 and have lost 5 in a row. Giants have to win to stay in the race for the division behind Dallas. They do own the tiebreaker. If for some reason they were able to win this week, and Dallas loses 2 in a row, but I doubt that's going to happen either. The Eagles are just looking for a win, period. The Giants' offense has not looked good at all this year. I think they haven't scored over 17 points in about the last 4 games or 5 games I read. So I don't think we have to worry about the Giants' offense. The Giants' defense continues to play well. And I think both of our seasons kind of took a turn in the Meadowlands that week when the Giants won. It seemed to be that we were on a downhill slope, and then the Giants, that were both 4-3, I believe, and the Giants took the uphill slope. I see the Eagles, they played tough the last 2 weeks, and I just think they're due for a win. I think the defensive line is going to have a good matchup against the Giants' offensive line. You can get pressure on Eli, and I think Orson's going to have a solid game. He's continuing to progress. I see the Eagles winning this one 24-20.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got to be honest. I had a glass of wine right before our show, so I'm a little lightheaded right now, not thinking real clearly. That's going to be my excuse here, but because I feel like it, I'm saying the Eagles are going to win this game also. I have it written down, Eagles 20-17. There you go. I said it. Eagles always play the Giants tough. They've actually, you know, dominated the series for the most part in recent years. And like Fred said, they're due for a win, and they're going to shock the world and win this one 20-17.
Well, I think the last time all three of us sat here when the Eagles didn't have a chance against the Vikings was the Vikings or the Falcons, and we all took the Eagles, and they all came up big. And I believe that the Eagles are not going to lose out this season. I would be very disappointed if they do. Certainly, their chance of winning Thursday night against the Giants is probably far greater than the beating the Cowboys. I'm going to Eagles at home on Thursday night, and hopefully the fans show up and don't just fold their Christmas tents up early on this team, and hopefully they're there in full force on Thursday night. And the only worry I have, like every other game, is how do you cover Beckham and how do you cover these receivers. But I'm going to go Eagles, and I'm going 23-20.
Eagles!
All right.
Just
hey,
throw
good
that
timing.
In.
Hey, Fred, I will throw it out. And, Chet, I don't know if you heard this or not, but, you know, one of my buddies who's a crazy Cowboys fan is all just bent out of shape about the rumors running around through the Dallas area about starting Tony Romo here possibly Monday and certainly next week against the Eagles if it becomes meaningless and not playing Dak Prescott and not doing it for rest, doing it because Jerry Jones thinks that Romo needs to play.
I don't think that's valid at all. I think they kind of debunked it on the Sunday night game when they were talking about it. Maybe they play him in the final game against the Eagles just because they have everything clinched, but not as, you know, a possibility that he's going to be the guy in the playoffs. There's no way in hell that's going to happen. Jerry Jones can, you know, he does some dumb things over the years, but he's not going to do that. And I don't think Garrett would allow him to do that either. So I don't believe it at all. Prescott's the guy. Maybe Romo would get a start, like I said, in week 17, but Romo's not going to be the starter in the playoffs. No way.
I can't believe that to really be true either, but I would love it. I would love for Jerry to come down there and ruin this thing. Because if you think about it, let's say he sat on this week, that means Dak would be, if we get a first round bye, he wouldn't be playing football for almost 3 weeks. And that can't be smart. So I hope they do it, but yeah, I don't think that's going to be happening. But
I'm not buying it.
You know how Dallas does it, then they always find a way to ruin it. So maybe they'll do it this way, hopefully.
Well, you know, it's funny. What both of you said is exactly what I said back to my buddy. I said, it's not happening, but I'd sure love to see it.
Absolutely.
Hey, Fred, one more thing I wanted to hit you up with before we go is I wanted to get your opinion on Jason Peters and Fletcher Cox going to the Pro Bowl. What do you make of that?
Oh, I mean, I think the Pro Bowl is kind of a sham at this point. I know Jason Peters, that neither of them had a Pro Bowl year. And Jason Peters, I guess it goes in line with all the other years where other linemen got in over Runyon because of reputation, or Runyon may have had a better year, or not just Runyon, but all linemen. So you get in because of reputation. But I don't know. I forget the exact way the whole voting process goes, but I mean, they should just get rid of the game. I mean, you got players that make it or starters that don't play, and then you have two levels of players that are sitting out the game. So you got players that would never even have made a Pro Bowl. They're like a fifth, like backup, or elevated to second on the team, and they get a Pro Bowl, and none of them should have that even on their resume. So they got to figure out a new way to determine who the all-stars of the league are. But yeah, I don't think either are deserving. Fletcher Cox has been double teamed all year, and I mean, I guess he gets credit for that, but I don't see it.
All right. For me, Cox got the big contract, but he was pretty average much of the time. He did have a couple of good games early on, and he's been better the last 2 weeks, but definitely not Pro Bowl worthy. He's there on reputation alone from the previous year. Brandon Graham certainly is more deserving than Fletcher Cox this year, and he is an alternate, so I'm hoping that Graham does get in there. As for Peters, though, I'm going to disagree with Fred. To be honest, other than the many false starts that he's been, you know, penalized for, Peters has been pretty solid this year, and much to my surprise, he's actually stayed healthy for the most part, so I would have lost that bet for sure. I think Jason Peters has played very well as the left tackle, and I'm okay with Peters going to the Pro Bowl.
Boy, it's a good thing we don't have all night, because me and you would battle about that one. Jason Peters needs to retire.
No, I thought he's been okay, and he's stayed healthy. I never saw that coming.
Well, you know what? When you let guys run by you, you don't usually get hurt.
No.
I mean, he's been terrible. I mean, he's been I don't think he's been completely terrible, but I just don't. Yeah, I don't. I'm probably 50-50 between both. I'm the polar opposites of your two argument. I'm probably right in the middle.
All right. Okay, Fred. Well, hey, we appreciate you you doing this. We're down to one more week of the regular season anyway, and always on top of it, and appreciate you coming on with us again.
Merry Christmas, Fred.
Thanks, guys. Go Bears.
All right. Merry Christmas, Fred, to you and your family.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Hey, Chad, how about a quick game of fair or foul, and why? You up for that tonight?
Hey, yeah, I am. But before you do that, do me a favor. I'm sick of hearing about Maxi Bond. Can you ask the trivia question again? Because I'm sick of trying to give this Maxi Bond away. Ask the trivia question, and if anybody's listening, call in, take a guess, get this prize. Let's go.
Okay. The Flyers only have 5 players with a plus or minus plus 1 or above. Who leads the team with plus 4? And he's a left winger. And it's not Giroux, Voracek, Simmons, or Gostisbehere. And he's a left winger. Now that cuts it down to about 3, doesn't it, Chet?
What's that number to call, Bill?
That number is 929-477-2855. Okay, Let's play some fair or foul, Chet, and let's start out with the Sixers. And we touched on this briefly with Frank, the combo rotation of the three bigs. Basically, they're giving Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel tryouts to see if they can play with Joel Embiid. Fair or foul?
I'm going to have to say foul on that one. Look, you know how I feel about this, and Bob Cooney wrote a great piece about it the other day. Bob and I agree that Nerlens is likely the better fit with Embiid for the long haul because that would be the best overall combo in terms of offense and defense, Noel being a much better player defensively than Okafor. But he doesn't seem to be getting much of a fair shot. I mean, part of it's his own doing with, you know, complaining about the situation, true, but Bob Ford also wrote a great piece this morning noting that Noel would probably work better in the flow of things once Ben Simmons gets to playing because the game will be played at a faster tempo and Nerlens is significantly quicker than Okafor. So boo to the Sixers brass for how they're handling this. That, to me, is foul.
Interesting. Okay. Let's slide over to hockey. Steve Mason's played pretty well, and so have the Flyers. Michael Neuberth is due back very soon. It looks like the 2-0 with a shutout, Anthony Stolarz is the odd man out. Fair or foul?
Believe it or not, I'm going to say fair to this one because Mason is the obvious number one guy, and he has played very well over the past 3 weeks. They had a 10-game streak, and then he even played, you know, very well the other night in the overtime shootout loss. Yes, Stolarz is 2-0 with a shutout, but I'm okay with sticking with Mason. Now, they do have back-to-back games tonight and tomorrow. That's Wednesday and Thursday if you're listening later on demand. So maybe Stolarz does get one more start, but if not right here in this situation, he probably won't because the Flyers are then off for 6 days for the Christmas break, and Neuvert should be just about ready to come back, I would think, sometime in the next week or two. So I'm okay with that. Mason is the obvious guy. I'd like to see Stolarz get, you know, one more shot, but it's okay.
All right. We talked briefly about this, but the Phillies added veteran pitcher in Clay Buchholz in exchange for a minor leaguer. Didn't give up much, and, you know, he's going to be expected to eat innings along with Jeremy Hellickson. Good move to, you know, to keep a young pitcher held back and use veterans instead, or should they be cutting the kids loose and letting them play? Fair or foul?
I'm going to say foul if I had to say one or the other. I mean, look, Buchholz is a two-time All-Star, but he's been very, very average over the last 3 years. I looked it up. Over the last 3 years, he's 23-28 with an ERA well over 4 during that time. So average at best. I'm not getting overly excited about that deal. And, you know, the more I think about it, the more I would like to see the younger guys get a shot. Maybe they just got him in hopes that they'll flip him either, you know, right away or in July, assuming that they're not in the wild card hunt themselves. So he's certainly not a long-term guy for the Phillies.
Okay. Next up, one of my favorites, Christian McCaffrey, has opted out of his Stanford Bowl game, as has LSU's Leonard Fournette. And now at least one other has done it, a Baylor running back. And they are getting ready for the NFL draft. Not injured. Get ready for the NFL draft. Fair or foul?
Foul, absolutely. Play the game. I know there's that chance you get hurt. It happened to somebody else a year ago, I know. But still, that's life. Play the game. What do you say?
Well, I'll tell you what. I say I agree. But I will tell you this. Me and my son, who, as you know, is a college football coach, had a long conversation about this.
Mm-hmm.
And he may have changed my opinion, Chet, because what we talked about was when it comes to a bowl game, you know what the players get for a bowl game? Besides the opportunity to play, they get a gift card to Best Buy and some new clothes to wear. And the schools and the bowls get the money, you know? So understanding it from the non-fan perspective and trying to get a feel for what the kids get, I might flip, but I can tell you this. I would watch the Stanford Bowl game with Christian McCaffrey that I'm probably almost certainly not going to watch the Stanford Bowl game without Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, I hear you. And that whole thing that you just brought up as far as, you know, what players get in college, that's a whole other topic. That is ridiculous.
Yeah. So, I'm kind of up in the air on that. The football fan certainly wants to see – these guys play, because I think it's going to get worse. And the scenario I came up with was, what if you went to Mel Kiper's big board and you took it, the top 32 guys, projected first rounders, and the only ones that played in bowl games were the ones playing for the championship? What kind of bowls would you have if, you know, if the only ones playing were the two teams that were in the finals?
I'm with you.
Yeah, it's a sticky situation, something the NCAA is going to have to figure out, along with all the other things they've got to figure out. All right, hey, let's good job on Fair or Foul. Some good topics there. Let's slide over. Let's talk about the Philly Press Box Radio Pick'em Pool. Joe Wash was the winner, Chet, this week, 15-1. I don't care what you're picking. 15 out of 16 is pretty good, any way you look at it.
That's impressive.
Yes, it is. And hey, as the season standings, the separation, you know, it's finally happened. There's just 2 weeks to go to win the signed Eagles Reggie White mini helmet. It took a huge turn. Billy Furman, that same one that I have to listen to several times each day, has a 3-game lead over Ed Chambers, a 5-game lead over Gene McCann and Bill Hovis. Making up 5 or more games at this point might be tough to do, but you never know. We might be down to a 2-team race here, and time certainly is running out, but anything can happen.
Yeah, you got that right.
Well, and by the way, Chet, have you heard anything from our pal Danny Bevins recently about the pool? He's sitting somewhere, I think, down there below you, I think.
Yeah, he's been quiet lately, not nearly the trash talk that he did last year. I don't know why that is. I'm right in the middle of the pack, by the way, which is better than the Eagles at this point, so I'll take it.
Yeah, well, and you know what? It's always fun when you get to look down there and see Danny and Bob Sullivan down there behind us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
All right, Chet, hey, who do we have lined up for next week? Uh-oh, the drum roll.
Hey, why not? Next week's guest, Bill, is a guy who was a great football player in the 1980s and even into the early 90s. He is a member of the Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame. Before playing 6 years in the NFL, 1990 through 95, he was an all-state running back at Frankfort High and then a star at Penn State in the late 80s, finishing up in 1989 as the Nittany Lions' second all-time rushing leader behind Kurt Warner. He was drafted second overall by the Jets then in 1990. By now, you know I'm talking about Blair Thomas, who's going to join us to talk about his career at PSU, Penn State's Rose Bowl matchup against Southern Cal, and the college football playoffs. So we are looking forward to having Blair join us for the first time on the roundtable.
Fantastic. I've had an opportunity to meet Blair several times, just as nice a guy. It seems like everybody that comes out of Penn State that we get to talk to, all great people besides having been great football players.
Well, I'll tell you, I was hanging out with Blair the night that Penn State played Rutgers with our buddy Swit. We were at an event at Tavern on Pine, I think the name of the place is. And, yeah, we hung out for, I guess, 3 hours. And he was just taking pictures with everybody. Everybody had a blast talking with him. And he said at the time he'd be glad to come on our show. So we finally connected in the last couple of days. And he will be joining us next week. And, by the way, I wanted to wish Blair very well because I think it was today that he said he was having shoulder surgery. So hopefully that went well. And we're going to talk on Friday, make sure everything's okay. And assuming it is, and I'm sure it will be, he will be joining us next Wednesday.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, hey, Chet, let's want to throw out about our website again, phillypressboxradio.com. Continuing to grow, we are fast approaching 10,000 visitors so far, Chet. And what was the date again that we launched that website?
Well, you're testing my memory here, but I do know this one, actually. It was October 5th, exactly 11 weeks ago today. That means well over 900 visitors a week. We do appreciate it. We also appreciate the feedback that we've gotten since launching it in early October. Once again, it's www.phillypressboxradio.com. Check it out.
All right. And again, for those that check it out, I know some people look at it every single day, and we can't thank you enough for that. You're amazing for doing it, and we're having fun with it ourselves, I have to say.
We sure are.
All right. Okay, Chet, hey, let's get to our signing updates at Carl's Cards and Collectibles, and as Christmas is rolling in here in the next couple of days, Santa Claus will be making his annual stop on Christmas Eve. And as we mentioned before, Carlos has announced his first signing of 2017 when the Chief Flyers goalie Bobby Taylor comes to the store. Don't forget, you can get all of your framing done at Carl's. Obviously, it's too late for Christmas now, but no reason not to start in January. So he always makes everything look really great there. So for all the websites, go to our website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, and click on Carl's Cards and Collectibles banner at the top and go directly to Carl's website for all the details, or stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call, 610-789-4996. You can also contact Carl on Twitter at Carl's Cards. And if you have any last-second needs of any Philadelphia sports memorabilia, Carl is open, and he will be glad to take care of you at the last minute as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chesko, we're getting close already. Do you have a parting shot tonight?
We are getting close. We're getting close to Christmas, Bill. We are just days away, and I'm still working on my shopping list. Let's see. For Dougie and little Howie, I'm looking for a big offensive lineman or two, a speedy wide receiver who can catch a football and run a route, and a couple of cornerbacks, too. I fear, however, that Amazon has a limited supply of all of those items. Now, for Uncle Pete, the baseball guy, I've put in an order for a clean bill of health for young pitchers Aaron Nola and Vince Velasquez, and for Mark Appel to make the jump to the big leagues and into the rotation. For Misters Hextall and Hackstall, I'm searching for a magic potion that will allow Steve Mason to channel Bernie Parent around April or May. And for Brian Colangelo, I'm hoping to give him the gift of courage, courage to subtract one of those expendable bigs. Now, since it's Christmas time, I'm guessing it will be Noel, getting something we can all appreciate in return. Let's hope I can be successful with at least some of that holiday list. And, oh, I have a bonus gift also. Since I just said hello to Merrill Reese Tuesday night at the Bordentown Chickies and Pete's, I'm going to put in an order for an Eagles Super Bowl win to be delivered at any point in the next 5 years. No rush, but, you know, in the next 5 years. Neither Merrill nor I are getting any younger. We're not going to be around forever, you know?
Well, and I hope you're right on all of those accounts. I hope your bag of goodies is full and true. Well, hey, Chad, and since we are here at the top of the hour, certainly want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas. And it's been a fun year. I don't know how many shows we did this year, but we didn't do all 52, but we did a whole bunch of them, probably up into 48 or so, I think.
Something like that, yeah. We celebrated show number 100 of all time since we started 2.5 years ago back in September. So we're up to like 116 or something like that right now. And hopefully we'll be here pretty much every week in 2017. So we're still having fun. We're going to keep doing it.
All right. Well, and as I say, Merry Christmas to you and your family and to your dad, and hope and best health to him as well.
Yeah, Dad turns 93 in January. I'm going to see him on Monday. Going to see a bunch of relatives over the weekend at various stops. So, Merry Christmas to all.
All right. Well, we are at the top of the hour, so let's thank our special guests, Frank Fitzpatrick, Fred Hugo, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. And Chet, before we sign off, Michael Raffle was the trivia answer tonight. Anybody knew that?
Yep. Left winger
All
plus
right.
five, I think he is. Yep. Michael Raffle.
That's right. That's it. Okay, so for Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday, December 28th. When former Penn State great Blair Thomas joins us, you can listen through our website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, our Facebook page, or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/PhillyPressBoxRadio, or on both iTunes and Stitcher. Merry Christmas and high hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
And go Birds!